terrorists declare war on the United States.
Military officials here at the Pentagon are confirming that seven are dead. At
least. Armored vehicle stands guard.
Downtown New York in chaos.
The 7.0 quake was centered roughly 10 miles from the capital city.
We want the public to feel safe.
Thousands likely dead.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast. Things that never change. God and His Word. Join Pastor Randy Reams as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
All right, we are in Joshua chapter 6. Joshua chapter 6. Joshua chapter 6, verses 1 through 8 is what we'll read now. Says 1 through 7 up there, but we're doing 1 through 8. Nope, 1 through 7. Here we go. Now Jericho was tightly shut because the sons of Israel, no one went out and no one came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and valiant warriors. You shall march around the city, all the men of war circling the city once. You shall do so for 6 days. Also, seven priests shall carry seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. Then on the seventh day, you shall march around the city seven times. And the priests shall blow the trumpets. And it shall be that when they make the loud blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout. And the wall of the city will fall flat down, and the people will go up, every man straight ahead. So Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant. Let seven priests carry the trumpets of ram's horns, before the Ark of the Lord. Then he said to the people, go forward, march around the city, and let the armed men go before the Ark of the Lord. You may be seated. At least somebody's excited about it. So, you can go online and see this. These are the remains of Jericho today. You could probably, I don't know, I forget how far, but you could walk around that within an hour, easy enough, that's for sure. And so, it's been excavated a few times, and in particular, I'm looking at it here from. I think it's the north end. And that trench right there, you'll hear me refer to it here as we look at a little more. So this was originally identified by a guy named Charles Warren in 1868. And you need to know that it's about 2 kilometers now from what they call Jericho now, the modern city of downtown Jericho. It's about 2 kilometers from there. But it's the lowest city on earth at 258 feet below, or meters below sea level, and it's the oldest known inhabited city that we know of, that we've been able to find. And it's been inhabited in some sense since, they say, the 10th millennium B.C. So there's several layers. It would be called, if you can look it up under what's called Tell Es Sultan, which means Sultan's Hill. That's a tell's a mound. And so if you know anything about archaeology, they have these in South America and Central America. Even in the Midwest, they found tells of Native Americans, okay? And so that's what it's called in academia, not necessarily Jericho, all right? And then it was started being excavated in 1907 through 1909 by two fellows, Sellen and Watzinger. And the reason I'm telling you this on purpose, I'm not just giving you information so you can sit there, why is pastor doing this, okay? And then in the 30s, from 30 to 36, by a German fellow named Gorstag. And then the most important one was the person who dug that trench I showed you the picture in. Most important in this sense, okay? Kathleen Kenyon. She's, her opinions, if you went out right now and you looked at, and I actually downloaded some academic journals from these sites I participate in. Anyway, where if they talk at all about ancient Jericho, they usually refer to Kathleen Kenyon's findings. And so she did that in 52 and back in 58 to confirm some things. And then there's a fellow named Woods that has been there recently. What is interesting, though, is the first two look at it and say this agrees with the biblical story. In particular, nobody disagrees with that. All of them agree. It agrees with the biblical story. The question is, was it at the biblical story timetable? And a lot of this comes into effect because of how archaeologists date the Egyptian pharaohs and kings. And to be honest, they act like, if you're talking, I mean, if you watch PBS, they'll talk about that Egyptian stuff like they know when. There is a whole lot of consternation about the dates there and also the dates of the conquering of Canaan. So, but it was what's called a pre-pottery Neolithic. So they didn't have, everything was Stone Age. So they dig down deep enough, everything's made out of stone. The axes are made out of stone. The bowls are made out of stone. Everything's made out of stone. They don't find any pottery at that level. And that comes in important because this is where some of the difference in discussion on dates come about. And eventually, they dig through these layers. They get to the early, mid, and late Bronze Age, and then eventually what we would call the Iron Age. And they argue over when this became deserted. Some guys in the Bible tried to rebuild it, but we'll move on. So, but one of the things they find there is in these houses, and in the early stages, the houses were round and then they became square, but they buried their dead in the floors of their houses. Many cultures did that, but they often decapitated them and then filled their head with plaster and put different kinds of seashells in the eyes. And I thought I had one. No, I think I'll have your picture where you actually see, did I have it in that last one? Yeah, you can actually see one of the heads right there. So they're not sure whether the Jerichoites were headhunters, that's one theory. Others believe there was ancestry worship in the process. But Jericho basically means new moon. So many people believe they were moon worshipers, but we know they kept the heads of dead people around the house. You know, nice decor up there next to the flat screen. Yeah, maybe a little candle there. So I'm doing this to say this is a very, I'll call it pagan culture. Because remember, as we address the conquering of Canaan, people try to call it genocide. I know they try to do that, but went all the way back to Abraham. And he says that it's going to be your descendants are going to be in captivity for 400 years because that the iniquity, the sin of these people who live here is not full yet. So God's given them 400 years to change their ways. They don't. We even get, as we've seen, they get to hear and see what God does in Israel during those 40 years in the wilderness. And the only person we see wakes up and smells the coffee is Rahab. So people try to act like this. No, God's giving them a chance to change just by watching the Jordan part. Hear how do people eat in the desert? The manna, the whole story, we talked about that, and all of them were quaking and shaking with fear over that. So these people are a wicked people, and I'll make more connection with it. If I remember, this is Gustav's digging up a part of the walls. Actually, you're seeing broken walls here falling this way. You're seeing a foundation here, and I've got some other images I've taken right out of journals, academic journals here, and tried to make them apropos for you. But that they can tell that was about 3.6 meters high, so around 12 feet, I think, if it works out right, and about 6 feet wide, the front wall, and I'll explain that in a minute, okay? So this tower was the tallest structure until the Pyramid of Djoser in Egypt. And if you remember the Pyramid of Djoser, many people believe that's Joseph. Because if you recall, when we went through that period in the Bible, we were there in the Pentateuch and then the Genesis and Exodus, okay? The Pyramid of Djoser, they found grain sites, and there's this called the Famine Steel. It's this big giant rock. It talks about this guy, this King Dozier, has a dream about 7 years of famine. And then this guy comes in that they name him Hoth, and he comes along and gives him wisdom about how to store up. Anybody remember that? Okay, so but until Joseph then had come and built this, or King Dozier had, the tower of, and I'll show you, you'll see a picture of it later, the tower in Jericho was the tallest fortified structure that they knew of on the planet. Now, this the scholars think that more than because the way it was built, it was almost solid. It really wasn't necessarily very well for defensive. It was meant to intimidate, to sort of scare you off as you see it across the Jordan Valley. So the site I showed you earlier, the dig there at the Tell. So today there's a road that runs here. They put in a long time ago. All right, so you can see portion of it's cut off. But this would be what we'll call the inner wall, really the main city wall. And then there's this wall out here. Now, if you recall, when we talked about crossing the Jordan and we showed the floodplain, remember the pictures I showed of the grape floods in 1935 there? The first wall that'll be down here at this level we'll talk about was because of flooding. So we know that Jordan actually flooded that wide and they crossed at flood stage. This is right out of, you can see this is from 1952. This is out of an academic paper. This picture, I didn't make that up. Okay. But we're talking about those two walls there. So this is, again, out of an academic. If you want a copy of it, I can give it to you. Academic journal. This is to be the outside wall. This is stuff they're excavating and digging out here. This is the outside wall. And this is the layout of the houses they see inside. So like this house right here, you notice it's on the wall. So the concept, we know that Rahab's house was on the wall. Well, guess what? They dig and they find out. Now, this place between the two walls originally wasn't meant to be inhabited. And it was actually sort of plastered, I guess, smooth. But the poor people would move out here. So one of the discussions on the pottery is, if you dig here, you find pottery that only poor people have. So when Kathleen Kenyon dug here, all right, she notices that there's this fancy imported pottery that's around in most of the city, and she doesn't find it there. And she says, oh, so therefore these people died off before that fancy foreign pottery, so it's called evidence from absence. I don't find it, so therefore. Well, there's been other sort of pottery experts come along and discuss this. Just because you didn't find it there doesn't mean it's not in the area what they call the palace region or the other regions. And so other people have come in and since and analyzed that pottery and says, we think you're wrong. But since her last paper, she actually died before her last paper. So it's sort of come out, there's been analysts. But the point is, if I can prove the Bible's wrong, I'm going with that lady. Doesn't matter what the two other guys dug came up with. Well, we're more advanced than our. I always want to ask them. You know who invented the dating of pottery in the Levant? That's this region or this part of the world. A guy named Albright. You can go online and look at him, and he's the one who decided. If I see this pottery, it's from this period. If I see this pottery, it's from this period. And he did it based on the Bible. So even they want to talk about Albright's techniques of dating pottery and want to use them, but then try to tell us now that they use them, you're wrong because that would prove the Bible and we can't do that. Okay? So, there are people actually suggest the timetable is off as a whole by 1,000 years. The difficulty is I read in Scripture, it says that all the things of gold, silver, iron, and bronze was to be kept for the temple. That tells me that they're at the end of the Bronze Age, moving into the Iron Age, by Bible. So, and I'm a Bible guy, so I don't care what you dig up. And you say, I've been there, I've watched, I love documentaries, and I watch PBS, and you watch one, and then you watch another on the same subject, and you get totally different ideas, dates, whatever. They act like there's certainty in the process. Even the carbon dating on this, one of them comes back and proves the Bible idea. Well, that wasn't enough. We should have more carbon. I'm not that big of a fan of carbon dating anyway, radioactive or otherwise in any way. But basically here, and you'll see this part of the drawing here, again, is taken out of an academic journal. This part I've taken out to show you what they believe the walls look like to begin with. So this right here is existing mound, the hill that was there. You want to get up on a high spot, especially when it floods, right? And so one of the things they think they did was build this wall, the stone wall, on that outer edge with that flat part in between to sort of keep the flooding back. But then, like I said, people started moving in and squatting, if you will, and building houses out here. And then these walls would be higher. I just copied and pasted that out of the academic journal. You'll see it in a picture in a minute. All right. So now there's all kinds of debris in this area, and I'll show you that picture and their explanation. So this is how they think it was laid out, and it is totally logical. If I showed you, the first ones are in German, because that Gustav guy, so it doesn't do you any good, all right, for me to show you the pictures written in German. But all these little layers and everything right here are labeled. You know, this kind of rock, that kind of sediment, these kind of things as they find in the process. So that's an artist's rendition. Oh, you notice they've superimposed it onto the map, you know, the satellite map, to try to give you an idea of that double wall look. Not about you, but that first wall, 12 feet, and then, how many of you realize that's three stories almost? Okay, with this gap in between before you can get to the city where the king's palace is, really take over, okay? So these are just scenes of modern day. You can go find these online. That's all I did. People have taken trips there and they post their pictures, you know, or their academic stuff. Most of these come from academic sites, all right? That you can go out and walk around the site. You can see over here some of the houses that they have found. This is coming from the north end. Okay, that's the tower. That's the foundation of the tower. And it was built long before the Israelites got there. This tower was being built, and it had been tacked over centuries and millennium and rebuilt, and they talk about how many times. And one of the difficulties with Kenyon's story is Kenyon's story puts these 20 periods of being torn down, restored, fighting in a 100-150-year period. And most scholars are going, hey, it's hard for a culture to survive if you've been attacked that many times in that period of time. We'd like to stretch that out a little bit. So that's where it sort of comes under question. I'm not questioning them. I'm just telling you what opinions are. And so here you can see a little bit of the type of wall that they built. This things would have been setting on top of this. This would have been a foundation wall. But this period here, see, this would be digging up from a period of time before the Israelites came, because there's so many layers in here over the millennia that they were there. Now, this is the trench that Kenyon cut through the one point to sort of try to find and see the layers. So these, like that first one I showed you with the walls, these slices through that are basically taken off of this idea of her trench that she dug there. The other people did too, but everybody tends to refer to this. So I took their academic picture. This is their academic picture. And I just shaded these areas. This would be the existing mound that was there. This is the fill-in between the two walls. So this wall would have been up there in the picture I showed you a minute ago. This wall was up here. This is all stuff that's been filled in over time. So, but this part right here is the interesting part. You know what this is? That wall. They don't argue. There are people who argue that. Now, it says the Bible, they filled it and went straight up each man. So as the wall falls down, it makes a ramp to walk up. Now, they find pieces of this wall around, but because it was on the surface, what typically happens with building material sitting around on the surface? Yeah, it gets reused. So they do find portions of what would be this wall up here, scattered down here. But this, that picture I showed you, the black and white with the wall, you could actually see that layer laid down based on the foundation the wall was on. So nobody argues the wall went down. Most of them say it was by earthquake. Non-believing, usually earthquake. There is a fault called the Jordan Fault. Thus the low part of the world there, you know, in the Dead Sea. Okay? So, but I'll show you here. They talk, and this isn't me. They're telling me this. This is, again, right out of one of those academic journals. The shift in the wall right there, it should be lined up earthquake. Here, this would be a previous generation dead, buried way down in layers. Earthquake actually cracks right through the skeleton. Here, they're showing, I did not put those arrows there. They put those arrows there. The academics did. Of showing earthquake in the layers below. All right? So at some point, they know there's at least one earthquake that does this. Okay? All right. So that's the end of the academics there. So sorry for the history lesson and the academic side of things there. I find the stuff interesting, and I have to figure out after I do all this research what to give you and what not to give you, because there's all kinds of stuff in there. So you've got an idea then what they were facing as they come out of Gilgal, and God's telling them to take this city, what it might be like, okay? It peaked at the middle of the late Bronze Age, the city did. I didn't show you pictures, but we talked about this before. Pots still full of grains, barleys, and so on, full. So typically, if I invade a city, I plunder the city, I take your stuff, especially food, but what they find is, when the walls were built, the whole place was burned. Does that fit the Bible story? Yep, but this can't be true with the Bible. Okay, even though all the evidence fits the Bible, we just want to argue about dates to try to get it out of the Bible range. Even though all the other evidence, I don't understand that. When all the evidence but one thing, the date you think you come up with doesn't match, why do you rely on the one thing instead of all the other evidence? I've never figured that out. Yeah, because if it's true, they got other things to deal with. Okay, so now we're going to try to dive into the Bible part of it, not just the archaeology, okay? And so we see that the city was shut up tight. We talked about this, about all the grains and everything that was found at Gilgal, and we talked about that last week. Where did they get that? It was at harvest time. All these people had harvested, but while the Israelites have crossed the Jordan, everybody runs into the city and hides. The safe place, the walled fortification. But it's shut up tight. Seemingly impossible. You don't have to draw this conclusion. You don't. But you know what I see? I see U.S. universities. They shut up tight to anything of God. Schools. And to me, the study that I just did in this is just prime example of that. But we've also, I think you probably ran into family members, friends, colleagues. They shut up tight. You say, church, I don't want to talk about that stuff. You didn't say God. You just said you went to church on Sunday. And they're shut up tight. Okay? And the reason I say that is, this is a spiritual battle, not just a physical one. You got people with dead heads in their living rooms, moon worshiping, and then you have God's people out here. And then the Lord speaks. Now, we already talked about last week, you have the captain of the Lord's host is there, right? Joshua sees him as he's scouting out Jericho. You're on my side or you're not? He says, I'm neither. I ain't on your side or their side. I'm on my side, more or less. Take off your shoes, your holy ground. This conversation continues, and this is where God speaks to Joshua, who says, see, I have given you Jericho into your hand, its kings and its valiant warriors. I want you to notice the past tense of the language. The Bible speaks of us that way, as holy, as justified, as righteous. And then you say, me righteous? My brother, I was talking to him last week, he was reading in the Bible, says, be holy as I am holy. And he's going, yeah, right. And so he's having this, you know, in his prayer time in the morning, talking to God, you got to have the wrong guy, because I don't do the holy thing really well. And so he continues in this conversation. He goes out, he lives in Alaska, and he goes out to his smokehouse, which has got 32 salmon in it and other things he was telling me about. But he goes out and he continues his conversation with God, and God reveals to him this way. He says, I didn't ask you to understand it. I just asked you to declare it. So he goes out there, and he lives out, you know, in the forest out there. There's nobody else around, and just declares the holiness of God out in nature. I said, that sounds like fun. But we may not get it, how God can call you righteous. Wasn't he around yesterday when I... Wasn't he there this morning when my mind was? But he's telling Joshua, I've already given it to you. Now, I'm not the brightest fellow, you know, but I'm going to go, I'm out here, they're in there. I don't see it. I know we like to think these guys in the Bible just always never had doubt. Never tried to, yes, God. But one of the things Joshua understood after his confrontation with the captain of the host, he wasn't in command. We like to think Joshua was the guy in charge. But once this encounter with it, he recognized this, I'm not in charge. That guy is. We'll go back on that hopefully here in a little bit. How many of you know who Hudson Taylor was? In the biography of Hudson Taylor, Hudson says this. There's three ways you can try things out with God. Make the plans that we can, carry them out to the best of our ability. That's one option. Option two, having carefully laid out our plans and determined to carry them through, we ask God to help us and to prosper us in connection with them. Or three, he says, begin with God, ask him his plans, and then offer yourself to him to carry out that plan for his purposes. I think Joshua understands the weight of the task set before him, and if he comes up with his own plan, he knows he's got to do it God's way. So when he gets this from God, I want you to imagine this. Imagine if I came to you today and I says, here, folks, next week we're going to go up and we're going to march around City Hall. All right? And we're going to march around City Hall till they wake up and they do X. I know the younger ones don't get that. All right. But really, he doesn't tell them God said. Did you notice that? He doesn't go to the people and say, God said to me and spoke to me like he did Moses, do this. No. He just says, here's what I want you to do.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcasts. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.